I'm in the middle of a garden. Surprise, surprise. You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. In my company today is...
Alistair Byford.
We'll get back to you just after this little bit of a jingle.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
This series of episodes is brought to you thanks to CD Stone, Giles and Paula and Howard, and too many names to mention. Hi, Emily, as well, if you listen. We'll get into how amazing they are in a while. Alistair, you have created at Chelsea what I can only describe as a little piece of calm. I can feel my breath slowing down when I actually jogged the wrong way around, what shall I call it, the campus that is Chelsea. And eventually got here, but it certainly is that. One, how are you feeling? Two, I won't ask you what the inspiration was, but for those listening at home who might be starting to Google Alistair Byford and the Monstrous Garden, what are they looking at? What have you created?
So I've hopefully created, as you described, this tranquil space, which is elevated. We're sat on a bench. Elevated up above in the tree canopy represents this kind of castle on a hill where we can look out in this protected environment. The family Monsters Garden is really symbolic of the normal kind of struggles that families face. We all suffer with them, you know, small, big, temporary, permanent. So these large boulders represent those monsters, different shapes, sizes, colours, textures. And they end up in this kind of reflective pool as Scottish beach cobbles, you know, a lot smaller, a lot more manageable. When we talk about our problems and share them, hopefully they get a bit more manageable.
When you get in with a, shall I call it, a sponsor, or you place a name over the door of the garden, in this case the Monsters, you have to sort of, if you're unaware of it, which I and the listeners, maybe on their behalf, you'll explain that to us in a little bit. How far into that did you get before you started to feel it with your heart and you closed your eyes? And maybe you had a, I say maybe, this is unknown as you're well aware at home, listen. But if you had an idea for the garden, sometimes you get in, you hear the Otis Redding or whatever that song is, or you see that woman, or you fall in love with that person, or this thing that you've met sings a little bit deeper into your heart. Did you have one? Did it change that when you got a little bit further and deeper? Did you scratch off the original plan? Did you eliminate part of it and then come back and go, actually, I feel a little bit better about this? And what is the Monsters thing a little bit more in depth, maybe?
Yeah, so for the two organisations involved, so for ID Verde and Family Action, we're both celebrating key milestones in our organisation's history. So ID Verde are 100 years old, Family Action are 150, and we both deliver kind of services within our communities. So Family Action support families, we manage open spaces local to communities that use them. The Family Monsters Project is a campaign that Family Action are running in their anniversary year. We know each other as organisations outside of this Chelsea experience. So for ID Verde, staging something, you know, on the world's greatest stage for horticulture was really important for us in terms of our celebrations this year. And for me, I guess my heart and soul's in this garden because I've gone through my own kind of family monster. So 2 years ago, diagnosed with epilepsy, huge impact to a young family like mine. So I could kind of live it. I could understand that kind of difficult journey. So this path up to this elevated platform is one which is representative of that uphill struggle. There's these boulders that represent isolation. And at the end of it, there's this bench where you can, you know, with that support network, your family, your friends, you can talk about those problems and hopefully they don't disappear, but at least they get more manageable.
I'm going to sidetrack into the bit that maybe, I say maybe, my microphone thing has fallen. It might not be as much a part of the story because you have a tendency at times to play things down. So when I say, how great are you? Logically, well, if you've got Irish genetics in you, you'll say, well, I'm not great at all. It's all of them over there. They're fantabulous. And I'm just, you know, sitting here in the corner having a pint of Guinness. That'll do fine. 100 years of ID Verde. That makes, yeah, since
1919.
That's pretty phenomenal for, yeah, for any company at all. Give me a brief history, or give me a history, a long history if you want.
So Idi Verdi established as a legacy business in 1919, so as English Woodlands, as it was known. And we've gone through various kind of name changes over the years, from English Landscapes through to the Landscape Group, and now Idi Verdi. But we're a green service provider, leading in the UK. We manage and maintain open spaces across the UK. I'm operations director for London and South East, so I look after consultancy. So as a landscape architect, I still like to design things. And as, you know, someone that's really interested in construction, we build things. So we kind of build things larger than this garden, so be it a public park enhancement project, so Beckenham Place Park in Lewisham, HLF funded, to Holland Park Adventure Playground. So lots of play focused projects that we work on to improve our local open spaces.
So then give me a little bit on you, and this is invariably, we're back to the days of old. Peter used to grow plants under his bed. Alistair did what?
So knee-high, everyone says that, yeah. Knee-high grandfather, really interested in growing fuchsias. So I have fond memories of, you know, taking fuchsia cuttings, dipping in rooting hormone, potting them up. Yeah. And then I looked at opportunities in horticulture. I remember my careers advisor going in and saying, I want to be a landscape architect, you know, age 12. And he looked at me and said, don't you just want to go and work in Next? No, I want to go and work in a landscape architecture practice. So I did introduction via Liz Lake Associates, then went on to do my undergrad at Whittle College. So pleased I did a BSc rather than a BA, because it gave me that foundation in horticulture. And importantly, the one very medium we work with is wholly dependent on soil. And you can be as conceptual as you like, but these plants don't grow without soil and an understanding of science when it comes to plant physiology and what they need to really thrive. Then went on and done my postgrad at Greenwich, then became chartered in 2008. Since then, my career has gone from, you know, private practice to the pleasurable experience of working on the Olympics as a project manager, to then working with ID Verdi to mobilise the Olympic Park contract, and then establish a presence in landscape construction in London and South East.
This is the thing that makes me, I say a little bit scratch my head, maybe scratch my head on behalf of the listeners, but you don't need to build a garden at Chelsea to, I don't know, I'll quote John Wire in this, who's never done, of Bowls and Wire, former guest of the show, he's never done a show garden under his own name, he's never done a Chelsea. And he, I hope I don't misquote you, John, but that I remember it, he says, most people do it for vanity, and the day I do it, I'm going to do it for that as well. It's along those lines, and I get that some people will turn around and maybe at a Hampton or a Tatton, they might build a garden that can be easily replicated, and that makes perfect business sense. Yeah. If you're a young designer, all of those things at your HS, yeah, do. But if you're a larger than Peter Donegan practice, which you are, it's not for money, it's not for vanity's sake, it's because there's something that says, well, my logic on it is that it's because, well, we'll raise their profile and we'll sort of become the Stu Sutcliffe, we'll become the bass player. Have I hit the nail on the head, or is there a reason where...
So there's a business reason. Sure there is. So there's brand promotion. We're the leading kind of green service provider in the UK. Why would we not be present at Chelsea? We've got our kind of industry representatives of Bali here. So there's that collaboration promotion of a brilliant industry both to work in, yeah, and for the members of the public, you know, engage with a contractor that's accredited, because you'll get a better quality result. But there's a personal reason. You know, this for me, 2 years ago, I was, you know, effectively car crash for me. So epilepsy, where am I going to go? What's that going to do to impact my working life, my personal life? And I remember conversations with, you know, senior management team at ID Verdi and, you know, ow, are you mad? You know, this is going to be something that is high pressured. Yes, of course it is. But this is my stepping stone back into an industry I love. This is me getting back into the things I love doing, with the people I love doing it with. You know, Chelsea is one big team. we've all got these individual plots, but you walk up Main Avenue, your neighbours next door, you're coming together to create what is can only be defined as just a masterclass in this industry for the benefit of people that come here and enjoy it.
We were talking about other gardens that I was a part of, and my mate Ed, who gets a mention now in every single episode. But we were briefly touching on gardens that are done on ridiculous, not for the positive, but ridiculous budgets, as in you've enough for a ham sandwich. Maybe. I say maybe, just about. And then the question becomes, why did you do it? I'm going to be a bit cheeky in saying, because you know people who know people in Ivy Verde, did you have a bottomless pit? Or, I'll put it a little bit more politely, lads, mum, I want to put a few more bits in. Did they allow you to do that?
Yeah, we can't get away from the fact that we work with other businesses that are there in business, and the reason they're in business is because they're paid for their product. So a lot of this stuff here is kind of at cost, so we worked very closely with Outdoor Design. This garden wouldn't be as magnificent as it is without their steelwork. But, you know, they've invested time, resources in creating something. So their view is that, you know, we're part of something bigger. We'll do it effectively at cost. And that's how it worked. With the plants, Dave Root, Kelways have produced the plants. And that's the one thing that I think is technically paid for in the real sense, but this garden's been relocated, so it ends up in a children's centre in Staffordshire. We've invested in terms of resources to build it, and we'll invest again in the relocation of it. It's not a bottomless pit, you know. There is a budget for this garden. We've stuck to it, but we've had the help of a fantastic supply chain. And if you take CED as an example, you know, they've got, I'm going to quote an inaccurate number, but what, 7 gardens here that their products are displayed in, and you work closely with Paula and Giles, and nothing's too much trouble, be it getting the stuff here, be it I've run out of that, can you get me more, because that's Chelsea.
Because I know a lot of the people that you've just mentioned, I can literally say it is, I don't know how your music tastes are at home, but we always end up there anyway, don't we? But it is the equivalent of saying, well, I think I'll pick George Harrison and I'll take Dave Grohl and I'll take Robert Plant and we'll just go and build a garden. Life becomes, on a serious note, when you take the pressure cooker, self-imposed, maybe I'll bite, on a tight space, on a high platform like Chelsea. Conversations that I've had with Sherry Carman, names you at home would have heard come up a little bit more recent. But in a nutshell, it doesn't matter whether it's Kate and Keith or it's you and Giles and Paula, the people who you surround yourself with, in particular when you know the, pardon my language, but the shit's going to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Possibly at a certain point, it might be a weather thing, in a nutshell, out of your control. And other designers, it's a budget. Again, if I reference Kate, very good example was when she found a pipe that she didn't know existed and she needed another 18 grand. You need people to come in behind you and sort of say, well, don't worry, buddy, we're all on the same trajectory. We're all going one way. There's nobody sitting there with a hurling helmet on going, oh my God, everything's banjaxed.
Yeah. So we had one only 7 days ago. So last Monday, I get a phone call from Jamie down at Hilliers saying my two key Betula papyrifera canaicas have gone over in the nursery. And not only have they gone over, they've knocked a post as they've gone down. So the two that I'd selected and have been grown for the last few months, knowing they're coming up to Chelsea, they're not here. So you've got guys and girls down at the nursery doing their absolute utmost to get something that broadly represents what you tagged so many months ago, and it's that passion and that's that will to kind of contribute to the project. And that's what struck me about this garden particularly. Those suppliers embrace themselves in the background to the project. So, you know, Giles is a keen supporter of what this means, and we were only having a conversation down at the quarry in that, you know, we both can associate ourselves with the video, the campaign video for Family Action, which is, you know, we've had children. We've all been there, you know, head in hands. How am I going to get through this? And that's one problem that is everyone can associate with. And it's temporary. But some people have got a permanent scar from that.
On the tree thing,
yep.
You've caught my imagination. Those who would remember a story about a garden in Cardiff. I didn't want to reference myself on this one, but you're the first designer in all my years chatting at Chelsea that has actually turned around, unveiled the curtains and went, me too. me too. So for those who aren't qualified in horticulture or are unaware, what exactly, or may I ask technically, I suppose, a little bit more in depth, happened with the trees that you had tagged?
So effectively, high wind caught the top of the tree. It came down in the nursery. They have stanchion posts along the line, which effectively keep them up and keep the irrigation system in. And it came down on one of those and effectively scraped the bark off the main bough. So as much as we wanted scarred trees to represent the problems that people go through, you know, once they're overcome, a tree will callous. And what we didn't want is fresh wounds that had happened only a few days ago and you can't mask them up.
Explain callousing to those who aren't aware.
So when you prune, or when a tree is damaged, its kind of outer bark will naturally try to heal that wound, a bit like, you know, you cut yourself, your skin will regrow. And that callousing is just the kind of the bark's response to fix itself.
I don't want to ask you for case examples. When I spoke with, let's say, for example, Lupatrons, some moons ago, I think it was last year episode, it might have been, I'm unsure, Tim Hell, our good mate, we're both smiling now again, we'll refresh my memory on that one, but she was able to give me a sort of a, to the listener, what the garden meant to those who got to experience it, and it was quite a privileged conversation to be allowed to replay to the listener, and a lot of us know what I say, for example, green fingers do, for example, but at the same token, we don't always hear what that garden means. In your case, what does it mean for Family Action for this garden to be here? Is there a story of the good work, the great work, in fact, that they do outside of maybe your own? And on a trio, what does it mean to have a garden relocated? And we tend to hear it a lot, that gardens do get relocated. And sometimes I understand logically that for the companies involved, again, volunteering sponsors, plant growers, nurseries who are doing it at cost and willing to go the extra mile again. Sometimes you just understand that a good relocation for the right reason, for the right person, it's like getting a cherry on top of the bun from your auntie when you were six years of age.
Absolutely. So in various ways we've engaged with Family Action. So from Escape Community Orchard up in Swaffham, we've had them grow some of the plants. I've been up there and done a kind of a engagement day. They've shared their monsters on the pebbles in the pool. They've made that fantastic willow sculpture which represents an organic monster. So we've got people that are socially isolated being engaged in something. Their project, which is kind of an introduction into horticulture, people are gaining their level one and level two qualifications in horticulture. Being involved in something like this is just immense. As a business, we've got 22 apprentices have delivered 360 hours of work on this garden. They're never ever get, you know, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to be involved in Chelsea. They've had that experience now. For Family Action, I think there is this, well, what does Chelsea mean? What is Chelsea? How do we convince a board of trustees that this is a good idea? But for them, it's, again, brand recognition, the project, the anniversary recognition, the fact that they're, you know, the Queen's a patron and she loves Chelsea. And it's an opportunity to stage something. The relocation was incredibly important for both ID Verde and Family Action. We launched a kind of competition for centres to apply and put forward their case, which myself and David Holmes, Chief Exec of Family Action, judged. And Silkstream Children's Centre in Staffordshire, what was striking about their application was that it's simply opening statement, nothing ever good happens here. Wow. And, you know, this garden is going to make a significant impact to both their environment in which they operate. You know, a very barren courtyard garden, which is, you know, typical concrete paving, And you imagine this being dropped in there. I mean, it will be dropped from space. It's so alien to what they've had previously. But we see it as an opportunity for families using that centre to...
Typical.
That's all right. Last minute things happen on press day. It's all good.
But the benefits of this project are you get an improvement of space. You get, you know, users of that facility being able to come out and experience the openness. But we're also going to be working with a local college. So a local college that runs horticultural training, they can use the centre, this garden, as a resource for their training. So it's ticking numerous kind of boxes for both organisations. So to ask, you know, what's it feel like for them to be here? You know, it's all manner of things that are good.
That has to be one of the hardest lines. It's like a Quentin Tarantino movie. I don't want to do a disservice, and I apologize to you listening at home for how I've worded that. When anybody turns around and says nothing good ever happens here, it's like a Jerry Maguire Quentin Tarantino. And I can't describe it any other way. Maybe my apologies, having Irish genetics, I'm not very good at expressing myself full stop, so I invariably say it in roundabout ways, as you're very well aware at this stage. Again, that is tough on the ears hearing that.
Well, the applications in the broadest sense were tough, because you're connecting with people that you don't know, but you know that through their involvement with Family Action, they're probably going through the worst times of their life. So, you know, to read something that like that as kind of at the lowest end of that spectrum, to know that this is going to have such a significant impact on them, means that you read that in the harshest sense. It's crikey, that's black and white, and we're going to add shades of colour to people's lives that they wouldn't necessarily get had it not been for this project.
I was involved in the landscape of a courtyard garden TV thing some moons ago. It was a hospital in Dublin. Glass on one side, obviously light only coming in from the top. The walls inside were what I can only describe as maybe World War One tank engine grey. Lady said to me, you know, what do you think? And I said, this is the most depressing room outside I've ever been in my lifetime. One of the workers there, the maintenance crew, said to me, we're only after painting it. And I said, and you did a very nice job on it. it's still grey. You know, you want people to get better. You want people to smile. You want people to giggle. I was doing a garden talk, but that came up in conversation on one hand. And the other hand was a girl who I'd done a garden for, who in my lifetime, a children's garden, in this case, for her family, and what I can only describe as a ridiculous amount of money. And I asked her after the project was done, after the garden was complete, I said, why did you spend so much money on? And she said, Peter, I've got 12 years with them until, and she points at the oldest fellow, was maybe 3 or 4, and she said, until he figures out what girls are.
Yeah.
And she said, the youngest is 6 months old. So she said, I reckon I got about 12 years. And she said, you put a price on laughter. Yeah. And I thought, that's kind of magical. Yeah. And it was the point at which you start to turn around and go, you know, you can see daydreams, or you can see equations, you can see a balance sheet, or you can close your eyes and you can hear people laughing. For this to go into your courtyard garden, I would ask you eloquently, how bad is your courtyard? One. And two, the design of this one is a little bit more a place of calm, I would gather, or at least it is for me, by the colours that you have used. So it brings in the life, it brings in the sounds of the birds that the listeners can hear behind me, and it brings something a little bit different in. So how does one dull, dark courtyard work with sounds of bird nature, or where you and they may be hoping that it would be something that was bright and purples and yellows and oranges?
Well, I'd use two case examples. So this one is turning a barren four-sided courtyard with grey kind of 600 by 600 concrete paving slabs into something that's beautiful, meaningful, has the ability to connect families with nature. I mean, we're up, elevated in almost the canopy layer of these trees, and I don't think there's any greater experience than being able to touch the canopy of a tree. You know, we're not sat on the floor and you're closer to it. So I think that for me is about connecting people with nature, and that's a common theme actually in Chelsea this year. But I'll use an example. I go and see my consultant at Adam Brooks in Cambridge, and Max Harriman's garden from Tatton relocated there, and friends Bowles and Wire. I would say that impacts me greatly. You know, turned a barren courtyard space at a hospital into something beautiful, and I sit there. So I go and see my consultant, depending on whether it's good or bad news. I'll sit there and reflect, and that opportunity to almost, in the chaos of the world, in the chaos of going to a consultant's appointment, you can just take a moment to sit on a bench. And there is a connection. So Max Harriman's bench was made by Woodcraft. The bench we're sitting on is made by Woodcraft UK, based in Yorkshire. And that for me, you know, gardens and relocation and what benefits they bring to people that have absolutely no connection with showing, with the industry, is something that I think we can all, those people that have done it, take something positive and good about what work and what impact we've made on one or two or multiple people's lives.
It seems to be a concurrent running team. I probably need to do a separate episode on the crappiest courtyards of the British Isles that seem to, on a serious note, be designed into buildings where building logically comes first, and the bit in the middle, that void that we'll just put down a bit of grass or pebble or pebble-dashed walls, becomes a nothingness. And usually they are in schools and hospitals for the greater part, or public tender procurement projects.
Yeah, residential, you know, that old term we used to use, space left after planning. And you see it even today. I mean, I was walking around a new build estate near where I live, and you just look at the spatial planning, you think, well, nobody can use that. What's gone wrong in the planning process and the master planning and the consenting of that scheme that's resulted in that? I think it's getting better. I think landscape architects are having a greater impact in the work they do, but we're often still driven by budgets. You know, the building comes first, and then the long-term maintenance obligations. You know, I think people are, or organisations perhaps, are designing out this high-quality open space that can be so beneficial as part of the kind of, if you look at a school and you look at a hospital, these external spaces are so important for access to nature, for the kind of green prescribing that they can offer. We all know, and preaching to the converted hopefully, that these green things actually have benefit to us human beings.
I'll be honest with you, for you at home, there are a couple of gardens where I've done one in particular. This isn't about me, I promise you, but we did one where it was literally 16, 20 foot up in the air, and sitting down looking on top of a tree with the client on a bench in an isolated space but surrounded by woodland. And this, in my lifetime in horticulture, is one of the few gardens where I've felt the same sense. And that can be, okay, Arsenal not in the FA Cup, but Arsenal in Europe hopefully doing the business, or your first time at a rock concert, or again that woman on the far side of the bar. But I do love the sense of being a little bit higher up amongst the trees, rather than, and I'm sort of half reminded of Fisher Tomlin when he did the garden where all of the benches were facing in, looking at the tree. Yeah. It just changed things ever so slightly, but it is quite wonderful. And huge congratulations, Alistair. It's a pleasure to finally manage to get you on the show. You're a busy
elusive.
Man. You're
well, elusive. The elusive Scarlet Pimpernel.
More popular than me is how I was going to word it. Yeah. But it's been a real pleasure, and it's been a real treat to sit here and chat with you on this really magically wonderful bench and a magically wonderful garden, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. No, pleasure. I think I've always wanted to feature, so I'm pleased I've done it. I tick off the bucket list.
I won't get a Christmas card now this year now that he's done it. But to you listening at home, anything you need, and if you need any of the contacts for what we've been talking about, or you just want to delve in a little bit more, at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSodshow, I think it is, and sodshow.com. And if you meet Giles or Paul or any of the CD crew online or walking down the street, give them a high five. Cheers, Alistair.
Thank you.